It's a hot, sexy death summer!
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week for our summer series, we are reviewing Midsommar. Is it Midsommar? I tried. Midsommar.
We can just go with Midsommar.
Midsommar. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis. We're back in TV Corner with episode 2 of Chapel 8. John, what'd you think?
Yeah, it's fine. It's getting more interesting for sure.
Okay.
So we're getting more information, right? Clearly, yeah. Nobody wants this guy, this family here. I still have questions, right? Like, I'm not sure what the deformed baby has to do with anything.
Oh, yeah. There's a deformed baby. So we find out the priest is had a baby with, some single woman in town. Younger single woman.
Yeah, and I kept confusing the priest with the husband of the annoying woman.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's like, oh, you're the reason my husband's gone, blah blah blah, but her husband was the guy that got killed by the random person we don't know yet, right? The bald dude, the tall bald guy. It's like a rando guy that is murdering people. And then outside of that, I'm pretty sure Brody's cousin is alive, right? Because his body's not in the casket.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely alive and drinking blood.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about. Like, these episodes are about as long as the ones from.
Yeah.
But they feel like several like different episodes, like really stretched out. So I keep forgetting it's the same episode.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is, was it like Steven wants to continue to expand on his mill or whatever? But the town doesn't want to work with him because we find out that it was his cousin, right? His cousin who just died that gave him the everything was pretty terrible and not liked in town by anybody, right? And in fact, they even blame him for the illness that was going around. So the man, I didn't realize this, but the man who died at the end of the first episode had the wife with the sick kid. I didn't know that was his wife and sick kid. So the sick kid ends up wandering to their apartment at their home at some point, right? Looking for her dad. And, but she's all sick and gross or whatever. And she ends up before she dies, she says something to the effect like, Steven's cousin and, her dad are outside waiting for her or something like that. And then she dies. So, and there's also somebody going around killing people as well. We shot the sheriff's wife died. And,
right.
Well, I don't know if they're related though. They could be unrelated, but there's definitely going on there.
Again, I'm a little confused about like who belongs to what family or whatever right now. Yeah. There is information to suggest that these people die, get buried, and then they get unburied, right?
Yeah, or he faked his death, or he rose up, because I think this is all, of course, this being, a precursor to Salem's Lot, that clearly his cousin was a vampire, right? Or something to that effect. And we see more and more hints of it. So how Steven or Adrian Brody's character is like connected to it, I don't know, right? But we definitely get a sense that maybe his daughter as well, with the bad leg, with the infected leg, is also seems to be more sensitive to it.
Question.
Yes.
At the end of the show, of this episode, Adrian Brody is upset by what had occurred in the town. Also because like her daughter, his daughter's getting bullied at school, right?
Right.
And then there's a bunch of like, you know, it's that period of time, like a bunch of really racist people.
Yeah.
What was the logic behind Adrian Brody going like, I'm so fucking mad, I'm going to unbury my cousin?
I think what that is I think Steven, the character, wants to start new, right? And he thought taking over this mill would be a good opportunity. And he in the beginning of the episode, he's trying to like recruit more people and expand on his business, but the town wants nothing to do with him. And most people are treating his children bad. They're bullying them at school. He goes to what I think really set him off was the Hallows Eve, you know, kind of like our version of their version of like Halloween. And so right. The kids dress up and they go into the streets and they're bullied, they're accused, you know, and the woman child dies or whatever, the mother's child dies, and she accuses them of being witchcraft. And I think so there's something she said there that rang true. So when she suggested that, why don't you dig up his body? He's like, well, fuck it. Like, he's like, well, fuck it. Like, I, you know, nothing's going right. Everything seems to be I don't want to say persecuted, but he's being, you know, judged unfairly because of his cousin. So he's like, for once and for all, I'm just gonna just dig up the body and see what it is, right? After having whatever this hard time this episode. So he does, and we find out that there is no body. So now I think that's the gist of it, you know. Just it's a summation of him just feeling like you know, nothing's going right. I want everything. He really wants this to work. So him, you know, being frustrated to the point where like, I'm just going to dig up the body. He's dead. He believes. So matter of fact, like, oh, he's dead. He's dead. He has to be dead, but he's not. So I think that's what that was. So it's a good episode. I think this episode was, it's definitely setting up a lot more things, more spooky stuff. It's kind of cool. Still has a good, to me, I like the slow pace. I like it. I mean, it's complete opposite of what From was. I felt like From, every couple of scenes, there was something crazy going on, right? And this one is more conceived as a episode as a whole, and it's telling a much larger story. It almost feels like a book, right? Like you're slowly getting information and pieces, and things are just, you know, revving up until the end of the season. So I'm enjoying the pace so far.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, we'll
enjoying
see.
The pace?
I'm okay with it for right now. Yeah. I'm not, it's fine. I'm sure it'll get more fun. It's just, I think in my head, I'm also comparing it to another vampire series called Midnight Mass. And I'm like, God, that was like better, you know?
Yeah. That one definitely had more things going on. I wanted to say a little bit more, I think, Midnight Mass. This one seems to be like, what's the mystery? What's the mystery of this? What's going on and everything. But that's why prequel series are hard, because it's like, we already know where this story's going. You know, David Soul's going to slay vampires, you know, in a couple centuries.
David Soul, the badass. He doesn't even lock his car door. Like, I dare you to break into his Jeep.
So
the door's not even closed.
You know what we should check out? Is David Soul's character related to Adrian Brody? Is that the lineage?
That's what's going on, I think.
I think that's what's going on, yeah.
He's got to be related to, like, the... Oh, God, what's the name of the... Oh, I'm blanking. What is the equivalent the Dracula's little lackey.
Oh.
Renfield, right?
Renfield, yeah.
Whatever that is to this, like, Nosferatu character.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right? I'd assume that's what the family is.
Yeah. That's funny.
Oh, and yes, confirm that they were, the kid's mom was Polynesian. I, like, kind of thought about that all week, like, man, I hope I didn't say the wrong fucking thing. It's like some racist asshole. like, just funny Polynesian, enough, I got a quick little story. We went to go have lunch at this restaurant called RJM's, which is over in Sun Valley. Great if you're over on that side of town, not worth to just drive way the fuck out there for that, to go to shithole California.
yeah.
But I was with a friend of mine, and he's Vietnamese, and we're walking in, or walking out of the restaurant, and this, like, clearly homeless, clearly drugged out older white woman was, like, accosting us, like, hey guys, so my EBT card isn't working for this. I just need, like, a couple more bucks to buy a pizza, blah, blah, blah. And in my head, I'm like, why don't you just buy whatever your EBT card will give you? Like, don't lie to us. If you need money, just ask for money. But we were like, let's just get out of here. So we're, like, walking away, and then she's, like, keeps trying to talk to us. And then she directs all her focus on my Vietnamese friend, and she's like, oh, okay. Did you have a nice flight from Hawaii, sir? I'm like, wow.
The fuck?
Racist. But she didn't call him Chinese or Japanese.
It's very specific, yeah. She was, like,
Polynesian. Yeah. I'm like, huh. You know. That's,
well, there's plenty of hate to go around. Yeah.
Yeah. Even our racists in California are more cultured than most parts of America.
To distinguish the difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and
good.
That's what I have to say about Chapawait.
Yeah, because they're definitely Polynesian. The kids. Same old.
I was going to say, it also makes sense because there's, like, the conch necklace,
the shells.
That the bully broke.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, I like it. I like where the show's going. Not bad. Pretty good episode. Nice second episode. I don't think there was a dip yet. I'm not bored with it yet, but I definitely feel like... I didn't know whether to say this or not, but I definitely... But I'm going to do it anyways. There was this, you know, they're having the Hallows Eve party in the town, right? And you could clearly see they're like, you could see the whole budget of the show right there. Like, it's very, very small. And they're trying to make it look big and impressive, and, you know, kudos to the teams and everything. But you could definitely see the seams of the budget on that white shot they were doing. So I just wanted to point that out. I don't know if it's helps the review or not, but it's just it puts in perspective for me, like, the show's still small, you know, probably moderately budget the show. So
we'll see what happens. I'm hopefully expecting some, like, big reveal of a vampire the next two episodes, because I don't think the cousin, who I'm assuming is the ghastly looking person that was, like, creeping in the daughter's bedroom, I don't think he's a vampire, really.
I don't think so either.
Maybe they're just crazies.
I think you're right. I think it's, who'd you say, Renfield? I think Renfield was the one that killed that guy at the end, and Renfield's the one killing, stalking people in their homes, including the little girl, plus the,
like,
wife.
This Nosferatu character already exists, and his like lackey dude is going around cleaning up. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's my suspicion. Yeah, that's my early suspicion for it. Because maybe his cousin, maybe there was a vampire, and his cousin is Renfield type, right? That's a possibility too.
Type, yeah.
Yeah. That's probably why there's quote unquote a plague and why kid babies aren't having eyes because of whatever evil thing is in this town, right? It's cursing the town.
Oh yeah. Ye old plague that curses the eyes and the nose.
Yeah.
And that's when the baby No Face Joe was born.
Yeah. That's because they didn't have anything.
I want people to talk like.
Those are just allergies. That's when they couldn't take care of, they didn't have medicine for allergies. That's what happened.
Oh, yeah.
They lost their eyes.
That is 100% what you feel like when your allergies are really bad.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. Cool.
Day-to-day life.
Here in LA. Yeah. Cool. So we're still on board. Hopefully, see what happens. Hopefully, it's revving up. Slow rev.
Yeah.
About to hit that second gear. So.
Yeah. But now we got to move on to our feel-good movie of the summer.
Yeah. Yes, let's move on to our main review of Midsommar. Midsommar, I keep saying that. I don't feel that's correct.
Yeah, I think you're adding an N somewhere.
I'm adding a couple of N's. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's just Midsommar.
Midsommar.
Yeah, there's no N, so it's just Midsommar. Midsommar. Midsommar.
Okay, hold on. I have the voice pronunciation, so this is going to be it. John, do you want to give us the plot for five words for
Midsommar?
Midsommar.
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yeah. For Midsommar, I have coming in at number three.
Midsommar.
Study it. Five-word plot summary for Midsommar. Coming in at number three, I have study abroad lasts a lifetime.
Yeah.
Coming in at number two, I have foreigner wins local folk pageant.
Yeah, that's accurate.
They're just like newspaper headlines. They ignore all the bad stuff. I mean, there's no evidence. And coming in at number one, hippie community throws killer party.
Yeah. So John, you've seen this before, right?
I saw it at the Los Feliz 3.
What was your experience like? What was your experience? Because the last couple of movies we've watched, you've mentioned the theater. So I always need the feedback review on the theater experience now.
I remember leaving the movie underwhelmed. Because I wanted another Hereditary. And the movies are not at all the same. I mean, they share similar values, but only according to like script points. But they are not the same type of movie. I think also because I was expecting like Hereditary for like some sort of supernatural thing, and this is not a supernatural movie, you know? It's more of like a straight killer, not, I don't even want to say slasher. Like, what would you classify this movie as?
They classify it as a
Wicker Man style.
Yeah, folk horror. Yeah, folk horror is what they want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember watching it again during that time. So when did this movie come out?
2015? 19, sorry. 15. That was a long ass time ago. 19.
This really came out. Wow, I don't know why this felt 2019. Like a longer time ago. I remember like trying to rewatch it and deciding, you know what, this movie is actually pretty good. upon rewatching it again, it took me about 3 days. I forgot.
3 days?
I forgot how fucking heavy it is. So I kept having to turn it off because I was just like, it's like too much for me right now. And I just like kept putting it off.
Okay.
Which is like, it's good because like towards the last like, 40, 45 minutes are a different kind of heavy and not as crazy as like the beginning. Because like the first like 10 minutes fucked me up. It like, I think after, you know, lockdown and quarantine and going through similar situations, not to that extreme, but it was like really hitting close to home. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow. Yeah.
Because I remember watching the movie and thinking, I was totally on the boyfriend side until he did that dick move with his friend later, you know?
Wow. Okay. Shit.
Because when you think about it, like, it's not really his fault that these things are happening, you know? And then he's just trying to be nice and he just keeps fucking himself over. And then he gets like, of course he's going to get upset because he's getting resentful. Right.
Right.
Cause I would say like ultimately this movie is about grief, but I think it's also about breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
I think is like kind of the basis behind the story. But now going through what I went through, it's like I completely understand both sides. Like she doesn't have anybody anymore. She, you know, is still freaking out on her own, which that part always made me feel sad. I always felt bad for her. But the closest thing she has to having anyone is her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll leave it at that because then the rest of it is kind of like what I feel the ending means.
Yeah, we could dive into that deeper. And there's definitely a lot to talk about. But my initial first thoughts are I confused Ari Aster and Robert Eggers movies.
Yeah, you do that often, yes.
And now that I have...
You're like, I don't like Ari Aster because he did The Witch. I'm like, no, he didn't.
But isn't he?
That wasn't him.
Yeah, isn't Ari Aster coming out with The Northman? No, he's not. So,
no.
Yeah. No. So now that I've seen Midsommar, I don't think I'll ever make that mistake again because I think this movie, I loved this movie. To me, this is like a masterpiece of a movie. And I don't say that lightly. Like, I really, truly mean that. I was enthralled with this movie every second of it. From, like, the opening shot to, like, to the end, to, like, the big, you know, it opens with, like, the overhead casting shot of, like, the snowy Minnesota and then to where it ends, right? The really sad, tragic ending. And I loved everything in between. So I won't make that mistake ever again now. So,
yeah, because not only was the script like it's so well written. I feel like you're probably upset like the first half of the movie.
Oh,
with
yeah.
What's going on? Like you don't like you're not happy. And it's like so well done. That's why I like Hereditary, because it's like he's just a good writer. But then aside from that. And the direction being great, it is spectacularly shot.
Mm-hmm.
It is a gorgeous fucking movie. And the production design is phenomenal. And I don't know if you remember when we went to the
Academy Museum?
Yeah, the Academy Museum. The Midsommar dress. That's why I was geeking out. I'm like, fuck yeah, this is so cool to see in person.
Yeah, and I had not seen this movie before, and this is my first time watching it, and... Man, I was blown away by just, I totally get why Florence Pugh became a big deal, right? And I love Jack Rayner. I love Jack Rayner. What was he? Yeah, he was in Sing Street.
And, yes.
You know, and just love that it's sort of a play on The Wicker Man, obviously, right? That's obvious influence on top of... just when they finally get to, you know, when they finally get to the commune area and you just like the cinematography takes over, it's just like beautifully shot, beautifully composed. Every shot was just amazing. And he has this wonderful score that kind of keeps you on edge and creates this surrealist fantasy sounding yeah. music throughout the movie and stuff. And yeah, absolutely worked on me.
Obviously has done psychedelics before, because I think the idea is like they're doing a bunch of shrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, Mom, but like he does like such a solid job of displaying what it feels like visually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand, like, if you've never done psychedelics and you're watching what's going on screen, like everything's like swirling and moving and breathing, that happens.
Right.
But when you're on these drugs, it's kind of like your anxiety melts away. So these visuals don't freak you out.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you're like sober in a theater, or if you're drunk, you're like, what the fuck is going on? But that's why to them, they weren't like freaking out unless they were thinking about something bad.
And I love that going back and reading a couple of things the director said in interviews, he says that this is his breakup movie and that this is about how to break up with somebody in a toxic relationship. And if we only take the perspective of Danny from this character, it's metaphorically a break from this bad relationship she's in. Like this Christian and Danny have a terrible relationship, and you can read, there's so much inference there and so many like things that you can read that this is a pagan death cult. Right. And there, and the guy's name is Christian, just saying, you know. And then there's also, you know, and there is also a component of like a fairy tale, right? She's an orphan. Yeah. Technically she's an orphan now, right? Who becomes a princess. There's another,
which is why, what's his name? The guy that invites him
mm-hmm.
to his Midsommar.
Pele or whatever.
I think that's why he's saying he's happy mm-hmm. that she's going with them, because she's kind of like something, because she's ultimately very important to what goes on in their culture. Somebody like her. And, and these are things like you have to like pause and like read what's going on the walls, or like kind of try to decipher so you truly understand what they're doing in there.
Right. This movie has layers and layers.
Community and family and feeling, you know, belonging, not going through something tragic alone.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I don't know if this is talking about, would you consider it a spoiler, the first thing that happens with the people that turn 72 or 75, whatever?
I think we can spoil. Yeah, we could talk. That wouldn't be a spoiler. Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
I think that's what that is supposed to represent or mean. Because, you know, like what the first time you watch it is very fucking daunting. You're like, what the fuck? Like these people just committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But in the grand scheme of things, they weren't alone, and this was like a planned thing. And I think it's so when they get to that point in their life, they're not alone when they go away, and they're not alone in the pain that they feel, because you know how like everybody gets weird and starts like screaming with them or, you know, doing all those movements. It's like, well, cause they're all sharing together. They're not alone anymore.
That's one of the main things, is that, that's true. This community gave Danny a way to express her grief, because at this point, she never did. She didn't know how, right? With her, even though she had a relationship with Christian wasn't very emotionally supportive, you know, and these people were, because when she cried, they cried with her and they helped her, right? They and all points of it. And even though these people, like you were mentioning, committed suicide, they were all, like you said, they were all there for them, and they went through it together, like as a community. So they, in fact, you can even say like they were celebrated, right? They were celebrated for what they had done.
To a degree where, so like when the husband, I guess, jumps off and he jumps straight down. So like his legs, which by the way, this movie is very graphic. When he like falls down and like his leg snaps in half the wrong direction, and like he's got blood filling up in like his brain and his eyeballs, right? He's not dead yet, and then they do this ritual where somebody's holding on to like this huge ass fucking like wooden hammer, like a long, like a, I don't want to say comedic, but like very Viking style, like large thing.
Right.
Like Harley Quinn style fucking a hammer. One guy does it, then a second person does it, then a third person does it, and I think that's also so one person doesn't have to bear the weight of being the person that ended another life. So there's three other people that share that together.
It's, yeah, it's a really like, really kind of like fucked up way their community with each other, right? That they can't, but in my opinion, we can talk about it in spoilers. I think there's little breaks and seams in what this community is, but idealistically, they kind of seem like a supportive together community, right? But the question is, like, in my opinion, there are things that, in retrospect, thinking like, yeah, there are, it's almost a complete facade, which is what you almost get because you're like, everybody's like way too nice, right? And everyone's just way too welcoming and everything. But
like
they
use these people for certain things,
Right? Yeah, there are things about their community that is dark, and you would suspect it's not completely what it's as it appears to be. But But just this movie, if only viewed from Danny's perspective, is it's this, these people helped her, right? They helped her cope with a lot of things and celebrated her, you know, was there for her emotionally. And this guy, Christian, I was actually quite surprised that you from when you first saw it, that you found things to like about Christian, because watching it for the first time, I actively did not like him. I saw that. But real quick, I'll let you say something. Just I actively disliked him because I felt like he wanted to be in a relationship with Danny, I sense, but he didn't want to do like the emotional work and be there emotionally for her, which is even, I think, worse to be in a relationship, you know, because then they're kind of just like constantly are just like bad for each other. You know what I mean? Cause I never sensed that. And a lot of his actions and behavior, his choices were just really selfish, which is even, cause there's nothing like overtly anything Christian does that you can say like, oh yeah, he's a bad guy. It's just a lot of his decisions were, I think, selfish or more for him. So,
because I think that stems from the first scene you see with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's having a conversation with his buddies, you know, the guy from The Good Place, who's like, the reality is he's like way too old to play that age, but he looks that age.
Yeah.
And then you got Adam Warlock on the other side playing the goofy part. He's talking to them and he's just like having like another, like, he doesn't know what to do. And they're all saying the same, like, dude, you've been trying to get out of this relationship for years at this point, like, why just break up? Like, it's not the end of the world. You don't really want to be with her. And he's like, well, I don't know. Maybe I do. And it's like, we've all been there too.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But what happens is like, before he can like officially break it off, tragedy strikes. And then I think it's like, he feels obligated to stay. So he's not hurting her anymore, but then once you do something like that, you start to get really selfish because you're getting really, really resentful.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And then I think like him going on this thing and her being around is why he makes all these like really shitty decisions over there, because he's also doing drugs with everybody, but like he's just frustrated.
Right,
which is why like I understood his point of view. But like, I understand both their points of view. Like, it sucks. Like, he should have just been honest. You know, like, that's the whole point of it. He should have just been honest, but he doesn't want to be a bad guy, and not wanting to be a bad guy made him a bad guy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a really revealing scene early on too, where Danny is talking about the emails and calling him, and she ends up calling somebody else, right? Like a friend. And that to me was the most revealing scene, because she's like, I hate that I have to like put all this shit on him, all her baggage, right? But
yeah,
she like needs somebody. She desperately needs somebody. And she doesn't, know how to reach out or who to talk to. And I guess that makes complete sense, because when you're feeling so overwhelmed emotionally with stuff that's going on, you tend to like just, you know, you don't know how to make sense of anything, right?
Yeah.
So she like lashed herself on to Christian and everything, and was just trying to just keep the peace while also subverting her own feelings in the process, right? She's always saying I'm sorry. She's always saying like, thank you and stuff like that. So as to not upset him, because she doesn't want to lose him. So I think that's kind of like a lot of their relationship, how it became so bad and how toxic it got between them.
Cause upon this viewing also, it kind of occurred to me maybe that she didn't even really want to be with him either, but it's just like that awkward, like, what are you supposed to do? And mm-hmm. Like I said, now I fully understand her perspective, because I was in a similar situation recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, how do you deal with this? Like, I don't know. Like, eventually it just kind of naturally took care of itself. It's good, because now we're friends, right? But they never got to that point. And then I think also deciding to go on a trip so shortly after, like, I think my thing is like, I should have, you know, immediately gone to therapy, but I didn't, you know, I was just like, I could do with this on my own.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would have been like, oh, I'm going to go to fucking Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this is like a very well-written movie.
Yeah. Just that. And all of those things that we're mentioning is just like stuff that happens early in the movie, and it just sets up this interesting dynamic. So when Pele is like, oh, we're all going back home, it's like an afterthought, right? Because all this big shit's going on, like her sister commits suicide, her sister murders her parents and her parents and everything. So, man, all of that stuff was incredibly. I will say Ari Aster makes you feel all those things. I think that's probably one of his many gifts, is just you feel like the pain of having to go through those things. It's not just something that happened. It's like this, he makes it feel like traumatic, right? You can feel like.
Right, yeah. Which is why I'm saying you got to finish Hereditary.
Yeah, I got to go back. I do now have to feel like I have to go check out Hereditary now.
Yeah. Yeah, should we go into spoilers so we can talk about all the fun stuff?
Yeah, let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
So there's my favorite sex scene in any movie.
The El Topo-like sex scene and shit. That's kind of the fucking vibe I got. The whole movie.
Yeah, or not El Topo, but Holy Mountain, right?
Holy Mountain, Holy Mountain.
Yeah, that's what I got to. And I like the subtle little like clues. I mean, you're not going to figure this out, but especially at the very beginning, the opening scene is all those like graphics that are on the walls of their houses.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of tells you what's going to happen. But of course, you're not going to figure it out just by looking at that. Mm-hmm. But then there's like more clues with Danny's like paintings that she has on her wall that also reflect what happens at the end, which one of the big things is they drug Christian after. Well, they drug him several times.
Yeah.
Like, one was to a point where he had no idea what was going on, and he ended up, he kind of, this viewing of it made me think he kind of got raped.
Oh, no, and yeah, then, he is a total victim. Yeah, he did get raped.
Yeah, he gets raped. In, like, the most awkward, like, calming like there was something about like all those women being there naked, and they're all like kind of helping him have sex with this woman, and he's just so confused. And I thought it was also very telling that these people have no idea how life works outside, because She's like, I can feel it. And she does that thing, like, that's an actual thing, like, they'll curl their legs up to their, like, chest, and that's supposed to help insemination.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, oh, I can feel the baby, and it's like, you can't, but, you know, like, there's...
Yeah.
There is a chance, like, nothing happened, you know, like...
Yeah.
But yeah, and then he, like, what, he goes over and, I should also say pretty much everybody that goes to visit that isn't a part of this community dies.
Yes, they're sacrificed as per their ritual, right?
That yes,
they,
yeah.
They basically use and, you know, eventually they use the out people from the outside for whatever, oh, right?
One fun detail I couldn't catch because I just wouldn't know unless I read it was the dude that ends up wearing... what's that kid's name? Adam Warlock? He's going to be the new Adam Warlock?
I have it right here.
From We're the Millers, right?
William Poulter. William Poulter.
Yeah. He, you remember when he like takes a leak on the tree that they dedicated to their dead?
Mm-hmm.
The guy that's like running over and yelling, all that stuff. Which, by the way, there were no subtitles when I saw it in theaters. So imagine how that went over for me. Like, a lot of it was very confusing to me. Like, because they didn't subtitle anything.
Yeah.
Like, he's running over, upset, and then that guy is the guy that wears his face when...
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when that he part, hits the other guy, the guy from The Good Place.
That part was... That was one part where that was terrifying, right? But it didn't make any sense. Yeah, now that you explain it, it tracks. Yeah, that he went to go.
Yeah,
there's a lot of murders that happen off screen in this movie. Yes. So yeah,
yeah. Those are all like, and the deaths that you do see are never murders, right? It's always
In what sense? Because
Because I was going to say, like, the deaths that you usually see are, like, suicide or, like, a part of the community. And then the other ones, like, you see people, like, they're on their way out, like, they're about to die, but then they die off screen.
Well, the guy from the guy that was trying to take pictures, the guy that you said was from The Good Life, or what is it?
The Good Place?
The Good Place, yeah. They smash his brains in, right, with the mallet, because he's trying to steal the picture.
Well, so they smash his head and he does like fall on the ground and you just hear him heaving.
Oh,
like he's got like breath and he's like, and then they drag him away and they kill him off screen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and how fucked up was that? So when they're doing the ritual and they put up like all these sacrifices, but they're already dead. Like they clearly just ripped off the skin and their scalp and put it on straw bodies.
Yeah.
It's like so disturbing.
Yeah, it was. It was fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of that stuff was.
Then they drug Christian again and drag him into, like, they start, one guy is teaching a younger person in the community how to clean a bear. I don't know how to how else to describe that to, like, when you clean a fish, like, you clean a bear, he's, like, filleting the bear, I guess, to shove Christian, who I guess is permanently paralyzed, into this bear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which very is Wicker also Man. Fucked up because I think they gave, there's like two other people in the community that have to stay in there as sacrifices also, but they volunteer, I guess. And they give them some sort of like, that same drug orally, but it seemed like it didn't take to one of the guys because he starts screaming when he catches fire.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, dude.
Oh, yeah, like, that was...
a fucking killer ending.
Yeah, that was one thing I'd have to say. It's like, a lot of this is like... That was one moment where these guys are... They've coaxed these guys into believing that, like, oh, you know, may your pain be minimal and whatever. Eat a piece of straw. But, like, dude, that guy burns and he screams and howls in pain because he's being burned alive. And it's like, nothing can really... No matter what you do, we'll prepare you for that, right? So there's definitely like a deep undercurrent of bullshit in this. Yeah.
Because I didn't hear it until just a little while ago, but you can hear Christian kind of doing like a low murmur, like he's not necessarily screaming, he's just doing more like that,
right, yeah,
while he's like going up in flames.
So the big thing is, I guess we should talk about, is that Christian was put in the bear suit, and per their 90th, you know, whatever rich part of their 90th time they've done this ritual or whatever, this celebration of the summer solstice, that the May Queen got to pick who gets to be in the cabin they burn, and she ends up picking Christian to burn alive. And that's really
how you properly break up with somebody.
That's how you, yeah. That's why I guess they call it a breakup film, because she chooses him, he burns alive, and she looks, the last shot is disturbing because she looks completely distraught, right? And then to where she eventually smiles.
Yeah, she's happy. Yeah.
She's happy, and then it fades to black. And I guess that's the breakup part of the movie.
She's finally been released from all of these things that have been hanging over her.
Right, yeah.
And she has like a family again. But yeah, you're right, the deception, I didn't really think about that for that moment. So they kind of like really convince her to make Christian the person, I feel, right, like throughout,
I think so,
the whole,
yeah,
ritual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even to a point where they let her go and look in the keyhole, like they didn't try to stop her really to see, mm-hmm, him, you know, and it looks like he's like cheating on her almost in an orgy setting.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah. That is, there's definitely things going on that are not, you know, they're doing things to suit their own interest. Right.
Like, yeah. Like lacing their pubes with LSD, I guess. Right. Because the pube juice, as no, I like to call it,
that's the menstrual juice. And then the puby, fucking pies they ate. So disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
As per ritual. Yeah. So,
yeah. Classic.
Classic cult stuff.
Little, you go over to your local bodega, you get yourself a slice of pube pie and a little menstrual drink.
Yeah.
$3.99.
I suggest, John, to be weary of redheads. As you don't date redheads, please.
I know, but I have an obsession.
Huh? Menstrual juice and pube pies are in your future.
Yeah, because even watching it, I was like, well, it's not the worst way to go out.
Yeah. So what do you think would have happened if, like, because clearly they drug them to use them so they can, impregnate their their women that come of age or whatever. So what do you think would have happened to Christian had he not became conscious of his rape, you know, or his thing? What is the procedure there? That's why it feels set up, right? That's why it feels like a setup.
Yeah, it 100% feels set up. And I think it's just like, that's one of the themes that is also in Hereditary. When you rewatch it, you realize the entire movie is a setup, which, mm-hmm, is like hard, very hard to catch the first time watching it. Yeah, I think, like, I'm pretty sure Pele, what's his name?
Sure, yeah. Say that.
Kind of had been setting this whole thing up.
Yeah.
Like, I got the perfect group. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the perfect group, and he ended up getting the May Queen, which they congratulated him for. You got this year's May Queen. Yay. Or something. I don't know. They're all cheering and happy. Or, yeah. No, but yeah, it was a fascinating movie. Fascinating movie. Cool. Do you have any last thoughts?
No, I'm just glad you finally got to see it.
Yeah,
fucking
super happy.
Fantastic movie. I'm trying to make you an Ari Laster fan, even though I haven't seen Lamb yet. I'm sure it's good.
No, he didn't direct that, did he?
Yeah, I think that's his.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't thought he was doing something else. He hadn't, when I checked it earlier, he, oh, shit.
Oh, I don't know why I thought he did Lamb. My bad.
He didn't, right?
No, you're right.
Yeah, I think I forgot, he's doing something else right now. Come on, IMDb, work. He's doing something called Disappointment Boulevard. So another cheerful movie, sounds like.
Got it. I hope it's a slapstick comedy. That'd be fucking awesome. Like, it finally has like a depressing title and it's just like,
well,
Johnny Dangerously.
Aside from the obvious stuff with the commune, I mean, a lot of that could be perceived as like black comedy, right? Like, a lot of that is funny.
Yeah.
Like, on its surface,
yeah.
Like, it's really funny what they're, how they're behaving and acting and the situation going on. Until, of course, it gets into like death cult stuff, right? But,
yeah.
And it becomes more sinister, but.
I guess, yeah. Like, you watch that, the 75-year-old wife jump off the cliff. And then you watch the old man jump off the cliff, and then you cue the Benny Hill theme song, and it's hilarious.
Well, yeah, the giant-sized mallet shows up and smashes his face in repeatedly. That's hilarious.
Oh, wait, what's today?
Today's the 17th.
Happy belated birthday, Ari Laster, who celebrated his 36th birthday on Friday.
Well, happy birthday to him.
Oh, now our audience knows when we shot this, when we recorded this.
Yeah.
But yeah, happy belated 36th, Ari Laster. Fuck you for being so talented and young.
Yeah, fuck you. but yeah. Yeah, love, really, really thought-provoking movie. Enjoyed it very, very much. Cool. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Robert Eggers Hereditary. I'm gonna give Ari Laster's Hereditary 9.7 sexy spooky bones.
That's funny. I was gonna do a point as well. I'm gonna give it 9.8 sexy spooky bones. Yeah.
Nice.
Very good. So as we continue our summer series, the next movie is about us, you and me. So
yeah, it is about us. Yeah,
it's about us.
Because we both are huge fans of the song "Put Five on It," right?
But yeah, love it.
Yeah. I probably got the wrong title, but people will know, and they'll know the clue.
We love to peel our fruit in the summer
and swim in the river of Jordan. If there's a river there.
yeah Until next week. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
oh, stay spooky. My beach girl voice might be
excellent. Yeah.